Stay tuned for The Cinema Clash, as Maryland-based critics Charlie Jewell and Hannah Buchdahl debate the merits of new releases, from the mainstream movies that Hannah tends to favor to obscure foreign films that Charlie likes to champion. It's free-flowing, unedited conversation with an occasional wine wager. Two very different perspectives, one entertaining podcast. Let the clash begin.
Hello, and welcome to the latest pandemic edition of The Cinema Clash. I'm Hannah Buchdahl of chickflix.net, joined through the miracle of modern technology by Charlie Jewell of charliejewell.com.
It's me.
So, Charlie, how are things out your way?
All the way, what are we, 2 miles, 3 miles away from each other? The weather's totally different here. You wouldn't understand.
That's right. Did it rain there today?
It did. It rained here a whole bunch today.
Yeah. Well, it rained 3 miles up the road, too, but everything else going well in quarantine?
Yeah, the 5-week-old is now a 6-week-old, and I think his sleep is 6% better.
Oh, good. All right. Well, I'm sure he's not preventing you from seeing a bunch of movies. So what's on tap this week?
Well, he is actually crimping my movie style. But we're going to bat lead off this week with a Memorial Day movie. It's already been released in Britain. It had its big London premiere. But we're going to talk about Military Wives, the backbone of the soldiers in Afghanistan who remain home. And this is from a director who we've heard from before, but we haven't heard from him on this side of the pond in a while. He was nominated. We're talking about Peter Cataneo. He was nominated for Best Director in 1998 for The Full Monty. Do you remember The Full Monty?
I love The Full Monty.
He lost to some guy, some rando named James Cameron in Titanic.
You know, and the thing is that I think if I had to choose right now between watching Titanic and watching The Full Monty, I would so easily choose The Full Monty again, because that one is just, it's just really one of those classics that just sticks with you, and it was turned into a musical, and I loved it.
Military Wives has a very familiar, very similar arc to The Full Monty. We're looking at blue-collar characters, and they attempt a crazy ad hoc ambition where their class is ill-prepared to take it on. There are character conflicts, especially between the two women who want to be the leaders of this choir. The military wives have just said goodbye to their husbands, who are off to Afghanistan for 6 months. They're sad, they're lonely, and Kristen Scott Thomas, who's the colonel's wife, wants them to, you know, watch movies about auteurs and have tea time. And she's at first resistant to a choir because these women cannot sing. And there are multiple montages of them not singing very well. And what I believe this sister act feeling film, and I got a lot of sister act feeling, will boil down to is everybody will say, my mom will love this movie.
No, it is. And I think you sort of missed the setup there. I mean, really, this Military Wives is actually inspired by a true story. And there really was this group of women that ended up forming a choir that launched a movement of more choirs, dozens of such choirs being formed around the world. And and so it really is just a fun watch. You know, it's a bittersweet salute to military family, so it's perfect timing for the Memorial Day weekend. So it's this dramedy. It takes place on a British army base, and you just have this sort of group of, you know, women coming from all different, just different personalities, and they can't decide what they want to do for their social activities. And so finally, some newcomer suggests a singing group. And that's what they end up trying to do. And they go from just being this, sort of small group practicing in a practice room on base to suddenly being thrust into the spotlight and being told, hey, we're going to want this group to perform at the iconic Royal Albert Hall in London. And so that's, you know, where this whole story is headed. And so for people like me who just love a good feel-good film, this wasn't a great movie. I mean, The Full Monty is still better, but it's a good movie.
I was not surprised at all to see that the choir contained one of each character. There's the very young one who just got married out of high school. There's the lesbian. There's the woman with 11 children. There's the woman who has problems with her teenage daughter. There's one of each, which I was not surprised to see. And I was also, I knew it was going to happen to one of them. And I was going to see which one it was going to happen to, who was going to end up wearing funeral attire. And I guessed wrong. I totally guessed wrong. I was backing the wrong horse on that one.
Oh, I totally guessed right.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah.
How do you get to see Military Wives? Well, the easiest way to do it is it's for free for Hulu subscribers. So if you subscribe to Hulu, you can go watch this right now, or you can rent it or buy it on Apple TV, Amazon Prime Video, and other major video on demand platforms. If you are in Washington, D.C. and you want to support the AFI Silver Independent Theater, you can rent it and watch it through their virtual screening room.
And I just want to add that it had my kind of soundtrack. Granted, this is a very formulaic film. The story is generally fictionalized, even though it's inspired by true events. But it's got a great soundtrack. And it's just a fun mix of 1980s pop rock from The Human League and Tears for Fears and Yazoo and Cyndi Lauper. And then it has that one designed to punch you in the gut original song that's sung towards the end that triggers the waterworks. And so if you don't cry at some point in this film, you don't have a heart, Charlie.
I did not cry. You like this film a lot better than I did. Man, this is just so...
I love it.
It's so static and formulaic. And I could see him actually painting by numbers within the lines. I could see him doing it while I was watching it. And it has a very defined audience that will love it, but it's not
engaging.
Not for you. It's not.
Did your wife watch it? Because she's a military wife of sorts, right?
She was, and I was in Afghanistan a lot longer than 6 months, and she would have probably liked it more then, but no, she was busy that night doing probably baby things. She did not watch it.
Okay, well, I vote for Kate to watch it, and I want her feedback.
She did watch one thing on what we will talk about this evening, and she liked it way more than we did when we get to that.
Oh, that's right. Well, we could just jump to that one if you want, just get it out of the way, because I'm more than happy to get it out of the way.
Well, the reason she watches is because it's very easy for us to watch films on Netflix, and this one was already on Netflix. I didn't have to click a link or anything. We watched The Wrong Missy, which is the newest output from Happy Madison Productions. You know what you're going to get if you watch Happy Madison Productions, which is Adam Sandler's production company. You're going to get a cameo by Rob Schneider. Oh, right. Well, most likely you'll get an Adam Sandler lead, and if not, you'll get a David Spade lead. And The Wrong Missy is the latest David Spade lead, and it's based on a misunderstanding. He hits it off perfectly with Melissa in the airport. They exchange phone numbers. This is it. He's finally found the one. And he emails her, says, hey, come with me on my corporate retreat. Let's get to know each other. Let's have a good time in Hawaii. And he texts the wrong Melissa. He texts the wrong Missy. The Missy he did text was a one date fiasco, a terrible lady. They were oil and water. They just did not mesh. They can't talk to each other. She's an oblivious character. And now they are stuck together for days on end in front of his new boss. He's trying to keep his job, maybe get a promotion. And he's got this Missy thing mucking everything up. Missy is played by Lauren Lapkus, the only redeeming factor in this whole film. I found her hysterical. She's so over the top. A lot of people will find that kind of awkward humor off-putting. They don't like it.
Like
it feels weird. But she was so insane. People might know Lauren Lapkus from Orange is the New Black. She was Susan Fisher on that show. She was in The Big Bang Theory toward the end. She was Stewart's girlfriend. Stewart was the comic book owner guy. This is directed by Tyler Spindell. He was an actor with such range as Doorman and You Don't Mess with the Zohan and little bit parts in Paul Blart Mall Cop and Jack and Jill. So he's very familiar with Happy Madison productions. Here's one thing that rubbed me. No, I did not like The Wrong Miss either. It sounds like I really did, but I didn't. Kate loved it. But that's because she doesn't watch many movies. So if you watch her one movie, you will like it. Here, did this stick out for you? David Spade is 55 years old. He's not playing 55, but he is 55, and he kind of looks 55. He's got a hair of a much younger man. She is 34.
It did stand out to me. I thought if this movie had, if you flipped the gender roles, I think there would have been a major outcry, because not only does he look more like her father than a potential mate, there's just no way that any sane person would risk being with this particular Missy. I mean, she's like a danger to herself and to others. And so for the purposes of romantic comedy, they're spinning her wackiness as like some sort of freeing positive influence on the straight-laced Tim played by David Spade. And I had a real problem with that. I was like, this woman is this knife-wielding wackadoodle, and I don't get it. And so I had some problems with this. You know, it's certainly not suitable for family viewing. I thought they overused the F word, you know, way more than they needed to. There's, you know, a lot of sexual content, although they're all clothed, you know, enclosed the whole time. I did want to point out that the wine I'm drinking tonight is Ménage à Trois, an old standby of mine. And, you know that fits well with The Wrong Missy because of a particular scene in the film.
That's a somewhat funny scene. There is an attempted ménage à trois that does not actually complete itself, but it's all elbows and knees. It's a bag of antlers.
I mean, and to you know, in Kate's defense, what I point out is that as quarantine entertainment, The Wrong Missy gets a wide berth. If I'd gone to see it in a theater, I'd probably want a refund. But as it is, you know, it's exactly 90 minutes long, although you could save yourself 87 minutes simply by watching the trailer and you won't miss much.
Oddly enough, Missy has an alter ego named Hellstar, which doesn't really go anywhere. And I think my boil it down to one sentence is, crazy women have feelings too. They do.
And crazy guys who love them. Okay.
I foisted one onto you because we've seen this series where we've just saw the fourth installment in a series. I'm like, Hannah, this is coming out. We got blindsided by this. We didn't mention it last week. I didn't know it was coming out. So I said, Hannah, hurry up and watch The Trip to Greece. Does The Trip to Greece hold up with the three other trips?
You mean like The Trip and The Trip to Italy and The Trip to Spain?
Those very ones.
The Trip to Greece, which is, basically supposedly the fourth and final trip in the series that began in 2010. I liked watching it because I've been to Greece and it reminded me of sitting outside with a glass of wine, watching a sunset in Ia or something. And so like all the previous trip films, I like it for the banter, the food, and the scenery. Now, it doesn't matter. You could be the trip to blank and you get the exact same film. So if you've seen the other three, you might as well watch this one too, because I think it's more of the same.
I think anybody and everybody who's seen the first three will watch this because Steve Coogan and Rob Brydon are just very enjoyable to watch. They're not actually as funny apart as they are together. They have good timing and they're tête-à-tête and they poke at each other. They're actually not good friends. They're just kind of two guys forced to be with each other. I think the biggest difference in this installment of the Travelogue series is they used to be almost 75% impressions. They would do, you know, their Anthony Hopkins and their Mick Jagger and their Michael Caine. And that's like the first film was 75% impressions. Now it's 20% impressions. And the rest is there. Now it's a commentary on culture and history and Greece and where it fits in history and the world. And they're still funny. It's not hysterical. It's wry. It's adult humor. Michael Winterbottom, the prolific Michael Winterbottom, who we also saw this year, who directed Greed, never found a movie he wouldn't cast Steve Coogan in, especially in Greece, his second film this year from Greece. It's got that gray area between real and fiction. Coogan and Bryden, real people, playing themselves. They talk about Coogan's appearance in Stan and Ollie, but there's fiction. Everything with their families here is not true. It's made up for this film. They reference Coogan's 7 BAFTAs. That's true. Kareem from Greed pops up, and they kind of go toward a refugee center on a Greek isle to get a little reality that doesn't really go anywhere, because we need to get back to the Michelin star restaurants. I enjoyed this more than the trip to Spain. I honestly don't remember the trip to Italy very much at all. I remember the first trip a lot. They just stuck to the Lakes District in England. And they point out, they mock themselves what they're doing. They have an entire discussion that says everything is derivative. As you get older, and they are getting older, you are going to repeat yourself. So before we can even criticize them doing this again, making a fourth installment and what they claim is the final, but yeah, right. They go ahead and they knock that criticism away from us because they're already criticizing themselves for it.
Yeah, except that I felt that the ending to this one just felt like it dragged on way too long. And since it was a very melancholy kind of ending, it didn't leave me with any of the impressions of, I just didn't feel the joy that I think I felt after like the trip to Italy. And so it's also a little hard, I think, for people who haven't seen the previous films to kind of understand that Coogan and Bryden are sort of playing these semi-fictionalized versions of themselves. And so it can be a little confusing because there are so many references to Coogan's actual career and the films that he's been in. And if you hadn't seen, for instance, that film Greed, which wasn't very good, you wouldn't get the inside joke, which, you know, the cameo from this guy who played the quote unquote refugee from the beach in Greed. And so, I think you sort of need to understand the series and be a fan of it. And if you do, you know, if you have seen them, there's absolutely nothing wrong. You might as well see this one too, because it just takes you to yet another locale and just gives you more of the same. And it's like a comfortable shoe. And, you know, I don't think anyone will be disappointed in it if they are a fan of the Trip series. But I think it would be a really hard one to watch just if you've never gotten your feet wet with these guys.
It pays enormous dividends if you have seen the 3 previous films. I do think you would still laugh if this is your first film. No, you wouldn't understand and get the entire feeling from the arc of the entire project, but you would still laugh. And each film actually ended melancholy. There's always a moment where Rob Bryden goes back to his family and Steve Coogan is left, you know, the bachelor Steve Coogan is left alone and looking out into the horizon. The ending of the trip to Spain was nuts. He actually, if you remember that, ends up in Morocco and you think he's been kidnapped by like ISIS or something. But, you know, this one is an arc of, they go from Troy, they actually start in Turkey and they recreate Odysseus's travels from the Odyssey, his 10-year travels from Troy to Ithaca. And, you know, at the end of this film, I won't give it away, but that's Steve Coogan ending his travel. And, you know, he kind of ends up back at home with a family he doesn't really know anymore. Big thumbs up for the trip to Greece to me. And friend of the program, Christian Hammaker. Thank you very much, sir, for pointing this out. He asked me, hey, the trip to Greece is coming out. How can I watch it? I'm like, well, I don't know. They just say it's coming out. But he did a little research and he found that for $5.99, you can watch the trip to Greece on Amazon Prime Video.
Okay. Thank you, Christian, for that. And I would suggest that's the kind of film that really helps to just sit back and watch with a glass of wine and then just sort of mapping out where you might be able to go when travel becomes an option again.
Speaking of travel, have you ever been to Chinatown? Not, you know, Jack Nicholson, Los Angeles Chinatown, but New York City Chinatown?
Not lately.
But have you been there in your lifetime?
In my lifetime, yes, once or twice.
I honestly don't remember if I have or not. It's possible I've glanced by it, but we have
a quick drive-by.
Yeah. We have an entire film now shot in Chinatown. It looks incredibly authentic, and it's called Lucky Grandma, starring Cy Chin. If you remember the Joy Luck Club, you will remember Cy Chin. She was also actually in an older Bond movie, You Only Live Twice. I vaguely remember watching that in high school, I think. Cy Chin plays chain-smoking widow Grandma Wong, and she is a grandma who is alone now. Her husband has died, and she realizes the world has no more need of me. And she says, you know what, I have no more need of the world either. So she just walks around with this scowl, this anger grimace on her face. Her fortune teller slash doctor tells her, you, Grandma Wong, are in for some luck. Your signs are coming in. Your tarot cards are great. You are going to be lucky. So she goes to the casino. She gets rich. She gets poor. And on the way home, a duffel bag full of money falls in her lap, and she inadvertently starts a gang war when she tries to squirrel away and steal the money. There's shades of Bong Joon-ho in here. There's shades of Coen Brothers. This is a first-time feature, I believe, from Sazzy Seeley is her name. I got a big, you know what, if this came out in the 90s, it would star Estelle Getty. I got a big Stop or My Mom Will Shoot feeling from Lucky Grandma. It comes off as so left field. It comes off as so oddball. Look, we're so quirky. Look, I'm kind of Coen Brothers-y, but it's not. It's not quirky. It's actually a little bit slow, a little bit meandering, and by the end, all I felt was a little bit indifferent, Hannah. How did you feel watching Lucky Grandma?
Yeah, I started watching it thinking it was going to be this comedy. It was fun. You know, it's pitched, I think, as a comedy, maybe a dark comedy. But I feel like I have seen so many films lately about, you know, some weird twist where there's a drug gang warfare and somebody gets caught in the middle, often through no fault of their own. I mean, in this case, Grandma knows she's made some questionable choices. And I did enjoy watching Cy Chin. I think she's just the heart and soul of this film. She makes it work, even though it's not great. But because she is, she's fun. She's this ever frugal woman who even hires herself a discount bodyguard in Big Pong. And so it's got humor. It's got some heart. And I think it's trying to ask the question ultimately about, you know, what makes a person lucky? Is it money? Is it friends and family? Is it your health? And so it walks the line between comedy and drama. And it does go off base towards the end. And it wasn't a very satisfying ending, but it has moments. And it's what I would consider to be one of those arty films that has at least a certain amount of mainstream appeal. And it is partially in Chinese as well, we should point out, when with English subtitles.
Oh yeah, it's mostly in Chinese.
Yeah.
Once I saw Big Pong, the gangster she hires for protection, I knew the two of them were going to sit on the couch watching soap operas. Like, I could just see it.
Right.
You know, this is a fish out of water story. Old lady grandma does non-old lady grandma things is really the entire shtick. Sazzy Seeley has partnered with an initiative called Welcome to Chinatown. This says it's a grassroots initiative to support Chinatown business following rapid decline as a result of COVID-19. Help us save one of New York City's most vibrant neighborhoods and honor the legacy of Chinatown. Lucky Grandma will not be in actual theaters. You can actually watch it starting next week on AFI Silver virtual theaters. The Avalon, which is another DC independent film there on Connecticut Avenue. The Avalon Theaters virtual cinema you can start watching next week. Alamo, some people like to go to the Alamo Draft House. They have their own virtual theater you can rent it from. So multiple choices, I believe. Also Apple TV, Roku, and Fire Stick as well.
Yeah, so again, this is your choice for the artier fare of the week, I think, along with the trip to Greece. It's, you know, it's a decent enough flick. I actually felt pretty much everything that we saw this week was pretty good. Like, nothing was terrible, which was kind of nice. And it's all, you know, newish stuff. And so I'm kind of relieved to have been able to watch a few things that that just really will somebody, it will fit the mood for somebody. And there are some options out there. It's a pretty wide spectrum.
That's true. Nothing was terrible, but it takes quite the open-minded person to enjoy both The Trip to Greece and The Wrong Missy. Not everyone is going to have those two fit in their respective wheelhouses, but we are such, you know, connoisseurs that we can accept anything. But I just want to emphasize that the best film this week by far is The Trip to Greece.
See, and I would say that for the mainstream audience, Military Wives would be the one to watch for this particular weekend. You can catch up with some of the other ones later, but I think Military Wives is perfect for a bittersweet film, feel-good movie for the Memorial Day weekend. So I would, I'd say that that is your best choice of the week.
It is the most mainstream because it is the most watered down.
Well, no, because I think The Wrong Missy is the most watered down.
No, that's got water in The Wrong Missy. That's got sharp edges. That'll cut you if you're not paying attention.
That's true. And I will say that as we predicted, Scoob was a hit on demand and it was going to be critic proof. So no matter what we would have said about that film, it did very well. And so that's what was going to happen, just very much like Trolls World Tour did. So those family films, when they come out now, they're going to be the family viewing party. So I'm not surprised that Scoob did well, but I still have no desire to see it.
You know what is surprising that made money is Capone. When Capone came out in virtual theaters, Tom Hardy playing Al Capone, it became meme material all of a sudden. He was so over the top and ridiculous and people were mocking it. And it made $2.5 million, probably way more than it would have made in actual theaters. So congratulations, Capone.
And that's another one that I have absolutely no interest in really seeing, but obviously somebody did. You didn't see that one, did you?
No way. I have no interest in seeing that. Well, I almost need to see it now just to understand all the jokes that are being made about it.
And that's what's happening is, you know, we really are sort of watching things in a reactionary fashion. That The Wrong Missy, was I going to watch it? Not necessarily, but it was trending on Netflix. And so I kind of felt like I had to. And, you know, you just want to be in tune with what folks are watching to really get a handle on the wackiness of quarantine viewing.
That's going to happen to us again next week. Everyone's already watching The Lovebirds, which premiered on Netflix today. So I think we're going to play catch up with that next week, I assume.
Yeah, although I have a friend who saw it and did not like it at all.
Oh, but, see, I've already had 2-3 friends watch it, and they've been raving.
Well, see, we have very different friends, because I'll tell you what, my friend who did not like The Lovebirds very much told me I definitely will likely enjoy The High Note, which is actually the one that I'm seeing tons of commercials for. So that apparently is also just another feel-good film that that would have been released in theaters and I think will be a mainstream choice. So I'm looking forward to that one next week.
Not to tip my hand, but yes, we are going to discuss The High Note, but we're also going to discuss The Vast of Night, which I don't want to tip my hand, but oh man, you need to watch that movie.
Yeah, don't tip your hand. I just know that if you loved it that much, I'm in trouble.
You're not, when I saw it, I immediately emailed our executive producer, Joe Bordeaux. I said, Joe Bordeaux, you are going to love The Vast of Night. You need to watch this movie, sir.
Well, you know, with the miracles of modern technology, we should be able to get Joe on here as well. He can probably weigh in. So one of these days, we'll try and branch out. We can actually do this now with some guests. So maybe we'll try that in the future. Even Christian, maybe if he's got a mic, he can join the fun. So that's something to sort of look forward to as we keep this social distance thing going, but need a little more. We miss our people.
We have a guest right now. Podcat is crawling all over this computer.
Okay. I do miss Podcat as well, but my allergies do not. So anyway, so there you have it. You pitch The Trip to Greece as the film to watch this week. I say Military Wives, do your, pay tribute to your military families that way. And that'll do it. And then next week we'll see what other people actually ended up watching. So, anything else you need to add there, Charlie?
Just that I think you can hear the meowing coming through this microphone.
I don't hear it, but...
Not meowing, but the purring. Oh, yeah, the purring is coming through. I'm picking this up. But yeah, thank you. Thank you. Yes, actually, I want to see... I would love to hear listeners see what they chose. I actually think more people will watch The Trip to Greece. Personally, I think they will. Even though it's harder to watch than Military Wives.
I'm still trying to figure out how we even find out like the equivalent of box office with all this stuff that people are streaming and renting. So that's your mission. You need to go and try and find that out for next week.
I gave you Capone. That's all you get.
Oh, thanks. All right. Well, thanks so much for listening to The Cinema Clash. On behalf of Charlie Jewell and me, Hannah Buchdahl, stay safe, wear a mask, and be careful out there.
Thank you.
The Cinema Clash with Charlie Jewell and Hannah Buchdahl is heard twice each weekend at 5:15 on Saturday and 12:15 on Sunday afternoon. Join us again next time for The Cinema Clash.